Hey there, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. The Prepare Podcast is a Salvation Army podcast where we invite women of faith and in ministry to share their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. I'm your host, Sarah McCullough, and this month's topic is about being a creative in church. Creative is a newer term being used to describe artists, and I've invited two creatives in residence here at Territorial Headquarters, Emily Aukus and our first male guest, Eric Himes. What I love about today's episode is how Emily and Eric affirm everyone has a creative side and ability simply because they are made in the image of God, our Creator. I hope today's episode leaves you inspired and affirmed that you too have a creative side. Thanks for tuning in. Hi guys, thanks for sitting down with me. I've got Emily Aukus and Eric Himes joining me on the Prepare Podcast, and they are both what I would call creatives working in ministry, and they're going to share a bit about their experience. So I'm just going to start in asking for an intro, and the way I worded it to you guys is if you could share what you do from 9 to 5, and if you do something else from 5 to 9, what does that look like? So why don't we start with Eric?
Hello, Prepared Podcast. This is Eric Himes from the new THQ in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, and glad to be with you. I am, from 9 to 5, I work in the youth department, Territorial Youth Department. I am the Territorial Director of Young Adult Ministries, Young Adult and Worship Arts Ministries, so kind of a hybrid. I do young adult ministry focusing on ages 18 to 29, and then also some worship arts stuff, particularly with the worship band called The Sing Company, our territorial worship band. And that's 9 to 5, and that's a really fun job. It really allows me to be creative and use my gifts and travel around and plan events and resources and try to, you know, continue to grow in what the Salvation Army is and what it can do and how it can help specifically young adults. And from 5 to 9, well, as a creative, it's like not really 9 to 5 for me. So it's from 5 to 9, I'm still at work really for a little bit. And then I get on the road eventually after I feel like I've given a good day's work. And then from whatever time that is till I get home, I'm sitting in a car for like an hour. And for that hour, I'm a frustrated human being traveling in weather and construction. And then when I get home,
355 is not that bad.
Yeah, I don't know what the roads are called or numbered. I don't have a sense of direction. That's a problem. And then, so whenever I get home, whatever that, I know what you mean with the question. I'm a husband to Kathleen and a father to Wendy and an owner to Scout, my cat, and own a home that we're fixing up, an old fixer-upper from 1930. And I'm a core member of the Oakbrook Terrace Corps, and I in a few ministries there, and a friend to people, and a brother, and a son, and all that stuff. Family man.
Mm. Thank you. That was a really concise, full answer. Thanks, Eric.
You may need to edit concise full. That's not a word.
I didn't say concise.
Concise full.
I said concise and full.
Concise and full. Okay. Well, that's creative of you to create that concise.
Concise full. I think it actually works. Well, and then Emily, why don't you explain what you do? Maybe not from 9 to 5. Maybe it's different hours. Like, you know, I work like 7 to 3-ish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's Emily, why don't we hear from you?
Okay.
Edit that. Bye. Okay, go.
Okay. Well, for work, I actually don't know what my official title is, but I do graphic design and media of all kinds and video production, including live events for the territory. And I don't know. It's kind of a fun job. Mm-hmm. And after work, I pretty much watch Murder, She Wrote and MASH on Netflix and go to therapy. So mm-hmm. that's about it. Mm-hmm. I have a cat, but.
And what's her?
Her name is Corporal
Peanut. Corporal
Peanut.
Peanut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hashtag she's, Corporal Peanut.
Yeah, she's got a following.
She's pretty great. She has a tiny head and a huge body, but
that sounds like Eric's former cat.
Sounds like an opposite of me. Or actually, yeah, former cat as well.
Emily, what do you do anything at your core? Are you involved there?
Yes. Oh, and I forgot to mention that I also am kind of an illustrator. I'm kind of just starting that and like getting to know that part of myself, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that is a thing I do as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of both. At work and out of work. Yeah, at my core, I'm involved in all kinds of stuff.
Do you do sunbeams?
Yeah, we do sunbeams, and I do core cadets.
Creatives or artists are often strictly thought of as performance artists. Well, at least that's what I often have thought of them as musicians, dancers, actors, painters. Can you each take a turn and describe what you think a creative or an artist is?
I think a creative person is anyone that wants to capture or unlock something that's hidden or discover something that's hidden or not known and make it known. So you know, the analogy of, like, you know, is it Michelangelo who carved David, the statue? Yeah. So Michelangelo was, you know, David was, that statue was in that slab of marble, you know, and he was a creative, very creative, he was a creative genius, mm-hmm. and he unlocked what was there and discovered it and found it. So that's like an extreme example, but, you know, someone that can look at, you know, something in nature and paint it or capture it on a photograph, or someone who can, you know, make a melody out of seemingly nothing other than inspiration and training, you know, as a creative person. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to be like some sort of grand artist to be creative. You can be, I don't know, you could be a Sunday school teacher who can describe God in a way that a 7-year-old can understand. That's like an incredibly creative process to kind of translate and communicate some sort of meaning and truth. So yeah, anyone who can convey a truth or communicate a truth is a creative person, I would say. It's a very hard thing to do.
What do you think, Emily?
I think, like, technically, everyone is creative. Everyone's kind of an artist in some way. Yeah, I mean, similar kinds of things. Like, you have to use creativity no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not good at it, but it's going to come up at some point. So I think, to me, like, and as soon as you start, like, listing or trying to, like, define it for other people, then it kind of starts getting weird, like, mm-hmm. like, who are you to say that my art's not art and yours is, or this guy's is, or something. So that becomes kind of difficult. But, I mean, there is such a thing as bad art. And there is bad songwriting or whatever. It's still a creative process, and it's still like that person is creating, but it's not necessarily something that someone else would want to consume. But whether the other people around you, like, identify you as a creative or an artist doesn't necessarily mean that you aren't one or that you don't identify yourself as one. So I feel like it's maybe more useful to, like, just, I don't know, if creating things, I mean, I guess that's kind of all an artist is someone who's creating something. If creating things is a passion for you, then, like, you're a creative. You're not, that doesn't mean you're good at it or that you necessarily should be, like, making your living doing that or that anyone else is going to like what you do. But if you identify as that, then you are that.
Do you think creating has to always have the purpose of expressing something, whether it's to a public or to yourself? Is expression always a part of it?
No, I think, so like I said, I've been trying to fix up this old house, and it's like all the things I've learned to do are not like creative things, like replacing an outlet or making a, like this last weekend, I like hung a pendant light in a room and I ran electricity to it and I put a switch in a wall. And it was like, that's not a creative thing at all to do necessarily, but it was, it's not unique, it's not whatever, but yet somehow in that like weird process of like failing and screwing things up and figuring it out, like something happened, something was created, and like I felt like so proud. And that may just be, that light may just be for my family or whatever. It doesn't have to be consumed by the Central Territory or something, but or the Salvation Army or the church or anything else. And yet, so something very simple, you know, like had a purpose that wasn't like extravagant, but it was somehow meaningful. And that's the thing is, like, I'm involved in praise and worship, and I would consider myself a worship leader and a songwriter. And so much of, like, people in congregations, there's actually a large pool of people in our congregations that don't consider themselves singers and thereby don't consider themselves artists and don't feel like they're good enough to even sing. And when I look around the congregations, there's often people who don't sing at all. And I don't think that's necessarily just like they've got a cold heart or something, or they're lost, or they don't love God. But I feel like they kind of compare themselves to others and are like, you know, I don't have anything to offer here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's such a shame, because like God, I know that God just loves the voice of His children singing to Him, and what He loves is not like how good our voices are, but like that we're willing to be vulnerable and express something to Him and something in community. There's something so beautiful about that. Even just singing just a melody as best we can. I know that God is blessed. But all that to say is like we're only given one voice in this whole life. And some of these voices, a very few, are extraordinary. A larger portion are good. And then probably the biggest portion are technically bad. And yet God, like, He doesn't say, like, oh, sing to me a new song, you who are really good singers. Mm-hmm. But it's just like He delights over all of us. And another thing about worship, you know, it's like not even a creative thing to be singing a melody together in unison. No, you wouldn't think that's a creative act. You would think, like, whatever, barbershop quartets are creative because they're singing in all these harmonies or whatever. That's a bad example. But, like, singing something in unity and agreeing in unison is like something that's like so, I think, so important to the church, because like we all have our own take on everything. And when we're actually singing a song together, it's like we're, for that moment, for those few minutes, we're like agreeing on something together. And I think that's such a cool thing. That's not a creative thing, but that's a beautiful thing. And it serves, and it's not like an extravagant thing, but it serves a great purpose in terms of unity for the body and also in our worship of God. So I don't know how I got there, but
that's nice.
Yeah. So, like, all that to say is, like, if you're listening to this podcast, you don't consider yourself a creative person, you're probably wrong. One, and two, even if you don't consider what you do creative, if you're doing spreadsheets or something else, that, or working at a toll booth or something, like, you have something to offer and you can do it with excellence. And that's really what God would, I think, be honored by.
Mm-hmm. I think there is something really exciting about having something come be one thing and then end up being another thing. Over Thanksgiving, I made Advent calendars. And so I just had like these yards of canvas that was nothing. And then I just started thinking of how I wanted it to look and how many inches the pockets had to be and the lengths and all that. And then within an hour, it started transforming. And it like gave me this like high and this boost of like, I can make things.
Yeah, totally.
It's not that great. Lisa's first one, I ended up making four because I was just like on this like high of creating, and probably the last one turned out the best. But it was such a powerful experience to go from one point to the next and to like see something created and know that I can do that, and I can do it in other ways too. And I think the kind of creating that I find really exciting is more even conceptual creating, like for this. You know, we experience that in church, like coming up with a program for a Sunday morning, starting with nothing to saying, well, let's put these elements and these to create a meaningful experience. And I think that that's one of my favorite forms, is that conceptual piece. How does the church benefit from creativity?
Well, I think what's so cool is like the church – When the church is a church, it is creative. It is doing something new and something for the benefit of humanity. And you see all these expressions that have come through the church, that have been birthed through the church, virtually every kind of art, like hospitals. That was born out of the church. You have literacy was born out of the church, and because of the printing press, which printed Bibles and gave God's word to the masses, you have people able to understand God and study His word and learn and a reason to learn how to read. And you have education, you have health, you have art, you have all these really cool things. So how can the church benefit from being creative? It's like when the church is the church, it is creative and it is expressive and it is they're in tandem. When we're really following God and we're embracing the opportunities and the things He has for us, it's like, yeah, we will then express those things through whatever He inspires. If it's music or art or health or education or whatever, and that's a really cool thing. And you see that now through history, all these great things that are part of our culture that we kind of even take for granted have come through the church in some way.
When I said that I get excited about the conceptual art, I think probably because I think that's my contribution, because I'm not a singer and I'm not a great drawer. I'm not those like traditional forms of art that we would think of. I can't really contribute that, but I can contribute ideas. That's why I get so excited about that, because that's like, and you touched on a lot of those, coming up with ministry ideas of hospital, teaching children to read. What are the other ones you said?
Art, music. All these. You look at the Salvation Army, it's like, it's really staggering how incredible it is, the fact that we're in 127 countries, but we have only just over 1 million senior soldiers, and when you add adherents and junior soldiers, like 1.7 million people who would identify, this is my church, and yet we're in all these countries doing all these things, and we're meeting all these needs, and we're doing all these things from children's homes and schools and shelters and disaster relief and et cetera. Like if you could name something that's merciful to humanity, chances are the Salvation Army is doing it in some place. Mm-hmm. And that's an incredible thing. And you see the creativity of even just our small, really small portion of the church universal. And it's like, man, I cannot believe that, in Haiti there's a there's a school that is teaching kids how to read and how to and has given them a place to sleep and has given them a place to eat and learn music and all this kind of stuff. That's an incredible thing that was born out of an idea, a couple in England who were like, we want to preach the gospel to everyone. We want to go where the church is maybe afraid to go right now. And you've seen now in the history of the church going forward, you know, we're not alone in that. And there's a lot of great, we just came back from the Urbana Missions Conference, and you see, I walked around the convention hall and you see all these incredibly creative ministries meeting needs and, you know, making solar panels for the jungle so that a missionary can translate the Bible into a language that's never been translated. And it's incredible. And that's like the kind of, when we step into Christ, it's like our life in Christ is like we inherit his desire to reach all people, where we can be a part of that. And then he inspires all these great things to do it. And the Holy Spirit guides us and directs us. And we're just blessed to be a part of that kind of change in the world. And that's a really beautiful thing.
So what do you think? How does the church benefit from creativity?
Well, I mean, I think the church benefits most when the people who are, you know, making it up are doing what they were built to do. And like a lot of people kind of don't see their own creativity. So if you can actually like be aware of that and being yourself as a creative person, and it's going to be like one of the sort of beneficial things that maybe you don't necessarily see. I mean, okay. If you like asked the church, the whole church, which would be very difficult, like, you know, what they think that the church would look like if you took away all creative expression, they'd probably be like, oh, okay, so we don't have singers anymore. Okay, we like our PowerPoints are just plain or something. Maybe we take out the band or whatever. But really, like, if you think about it, if you took away all creative expression, there really wouldn't be anything left. Like, you have to, you know, get rid of the person who made the PowerPoint in the first place. You have to get rid of the guy who wrote the sermon, the person who, like, put down the carpet in the building or designed the building in the first place. Like, you can't really do anything that the church does without some sort of creative thought. Like, in that way, it's not even necessarily a benefit. It's just like, that's how the church is. That's what the church survives on, is taking this thing that is, I mean, I don't know. It's just like the story of God has to be like expressed somehow, or it's just sort of something besides church.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, being image bearers of the Creator.
Yeah, and like that's what he is, the Creator. He creates. So
it's a part of our DNA too.
Yeah, and really, like a lot of people think that they're not creative, not artists or something. Mm-hmm. That's false.
When you have been, as two people that create and even create for a living, when you've kind of hit that like writer's block wall, what have you done to get past that? Maybe, I don't know if it's lack of motivation or like just to get past the block, the creative block.
I was kind of at that point for like years, for a while there. I think for a while I just was like scared by it. So I was like, I guess I'm just not, I don't do art anymore. Like that's, you know, I guess that's maybe what I used to do. But then I realized that like it's such a part of me to like create things, and kind of in the sort of drawing way in particular, that I kind of just still would find myself just like drawing circles on like notes in a meeting or something. I can't I can't just like not put pen on paper for years. And I hadn't really realized that I was still doing it. So at one point I realized like I just need to do something. I don't know what to make. I can't draw anything really good right now. I have like no inspiration and no desire to make anything. But like that's just a part of me. I have to do it. So at one point I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do. And I got out this weird little piece of paper in this notebook I had. And I got out my markers and I like drew a grid, and then I just colored the grid in like random colors. I just like grabbed a marker and colored a couple of squares. And then the next page I was like, okay, well, I did a grid. I guess I'll do triangles. And I did that for like every page. And by the end of the book, it's like actual designs. Mm-hmm. And at that point I was like, I guess I could draw something else. And it like pulled me out of my funk. So for me, it was just like making something that wasn't good. It was actually really bad, and I picked really ugly colors too. But it was just like I had to get back to creating something.
Yeah.
Whether it was good or not was like not the point. Mm-hmm. But that I had to have that sort of tactile feeling of making something.
One of the things you said was about inspiration. Do you think it always is inspiration always a part of it, or is it just like you said, like when you were coming back around, was it just the act of doing what you know you?
Well, in my case, there were some other factors, like medical sort of issues. But yeah, I think inspiration sometimes needs a little kick in the pants. Like, you're not always going to be super inspired just by like random walking around the world. Sometimes you have to like take yourself to a place that's inspirational, or, you know, get yourself going, trying to create something, and eventually you'll have an idea. But if you're just like avoiding the situation completely and mm-hmm. not creating anything, it's not very likely that you'll just wake up one day and be like, oh yeah, I think like I'll go draw the Mona Lisa. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. Like you have to, you know, you have to paint 10,000 paintings before you get to the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the first like 9,000 might stink. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember the question, actually.
What do you do when you're stuck?
Oh, basically? Yeah.
All right. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I think first thing is I need to kind of take stock. Like, where am I? Like, why am I stuck? Usually it's like there's a root cause to, not that it's like sinful if you don't create or something, that's not what I'm saying, but it's like for my own rhythms and stuff, it's like, wow, this is a dry period actually. I haven't really expressed myself or my love for God or even just sought after the gifts he's given me for a while. I haven't been maybe that faithful of a steward of these things. And so kind of taking stock of that. And the only way that I found, like, I love that example, Emily, of just, like, filling out the grid and working your way and continuing at it. That's the way to go. So it's like, and then the other thing is, how do I jumpstart the things that I know? Do I know myself well enough to know what inspires me? Mm-hmm. And then how do I surround myself with those things? So I'm inspired by music. I'm inspired by movies. Like, I love documentaries. So it's like, oh, I should watch a documentary today, and I should start thinking, getting that my brain thinking about what are these really great people who are artists? What do they do? I also like, I keep coming back to the house thing, 'cause that's been a big phase for me. It's just like doing something that's like tactile, because like at my job at THQ, it's like a lot of the things are like emails and mm-hmm. and like planning and meetings and stuff, and those can be creative certainly, but it's like I need to actually make something physical. And I've found when I go through dry spots, it's like, if I can, you know what, this, I feel like I've done a lot of, you know, things that, like, you know, if the internet went down or my computer disappeared, I'd have no proof that I did anything. So I need to like paint a room, or I need to mow the lawn, or I need to, you know, whatever it is. And so those things center me. And when I'm in those those moments where it's just me and the Lord, and I'm in the kind of the stillness, doing something, creating something. It's like, oh yeah, I remember who I am now. Mm-hmm. I remember why I was created, and for these things. And that's when God inspires lyrics or ideas, or brings me to a place where it's like, you know what, you need to talk to that person. You need to say something encouraging or whatever. So that's just getting back to my heart for the Lord is where all these things flow out of anyway. So when I'm stuck, I need to be around things that are inspiring and reconnect to the source of all these good things, which is the Lord.
When we were at camp at CBLI this summer, we did the Creating Your Life Plan. And I remember you were talking about when that one section when you decide your titles, I think, mm-hmm. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you decide your titles, whether it's husband, wife, daughter, mm-hmm. this, that.
Your role.
Your role, that's right. It was your roles. You picked your roles. And I remember you talked about kind of declaring, or you decided, you got, there was a role that you could fill in the blank if mm-hmm. it wasn't listed, and you wrote songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So was that, do you think that was a part of kind of understanding your, who you are as a creative person by just saying that's who I am?
Right. Yeah, totally. And it's scary to put yourself out there like that, especially, it's like, but I look back, it's like, wow, I have written songs. So that does make me a songwriter. Mm-hmm. But continuing that is an incredible thing and a scary thing. And so just kind of claiming that, oh yeah, God, you have inspired that. I'll trust you to continue and all in faith, take steps to kind of shepherd and protect this kind of revelation of who I am in you. And can be a really scary thing to kind of claim the things that God has placed on your heart. Especially, and the big thing about all creative endeavors is are you going to compare yourself to others? It's mm-hmm. we need to kind of shepherd our gift and look at God. Mm-hmm. And then I look at, there's so many artists that I admire in the Salvation Army and not, where I'm just like, man, I really can't, I have no idea how they do what they do, and I can't do that. And even just topical, just looking at this week at the passing of David Bowie, it's like this guy did so many things and reinvented himself in so many ways and was able to touch and encourage so many people and inspire so many people, and he did it right until the end. He knew he was going to die, and he decided, I'm going to make another album because this is who I am and this is what I do. And he released this album. I was just listening to it today, and it's haunting and beautiful and strange and true to who he was as an artist. And there's a legacy that, gained another chapter because he continued to seek and create. And that's such a cool thing. But it'd be easy for me to be like, man, I don't know. If I had 18 months to live, I would don't know that I'd go to the studio or something. And yet, there is an example there. And so, but not to compare, but to be inspired, I guess, mm-hmm. and to see how do they really do it. And that's the thing, for you people listening, if you consider yourself whatever, you have access to so much information. It's again, when I talked about the printing press and how that made the word, gave the word equality amongst people who could read. Now that we have the internet, it's if you want to figure out how to do anything, you can kind of almost, not anything, but you can do so many things by just watching YouTube clips and going to websites and figuring out how to make an advent calendar. You could find 20 websites that could explain it, or how to explain and make a light switch. It's wow, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So seek after those things and pursue them, and don't be afraid and don't compare.
Emily, when we were at camp, did you write down an artistic role for yourself?
I think I did. I'm not sure, actually. But I think if I did, I'm kind of just getting over this weird thing, because for just years and years and years, people have kind of called me an artist or a creative person, and I didn't really see it in myself. Or if they called me a doodler, fine. But as soon as they start calling me an artist, I'm like, okay, but this over here is art, and this thing that I'm doing is not that. Mm-hmm. This is just a doodle in my notebook, that doesn't count as art. So I would never, like, accept even that they said that I'm an artist. And kind of, it's kind of rude and dismissive of all of your friends if, like, every single person you know is saying that you're one thing and you're like, eh, no, I think you're all just dumb. Like,
kind of.
Like, maybe all of the people that I know or come in contact with have bad taste, but that's not very likely. It's more likely that I'm, like, having some sort of self-esteem issue or whatever that's keeping me from seeing, like, what everyone else is seeing in me, which is always going to be really awkward because you can't see from other people's point of view. But at some point, like, I have to just believe them. Like, none of these people have lied to me in the past.
They're not doing any favors by lying to you.
Yeah, they don't seem to have, like, weird opinions or perspectives on other things in life. I don't see them being like, ooh, do you see that guy over there? Like, he, you know, he's really a good singer. And I hear him, I'm like, no, that's actually every note's off key. So if everyone's telling me the same thing, I don't necessarily have to, like, grasp it. But at some point, I just decided, like, I need to believe them. And I don't know, that's kind of how I got where I am, but I'm not really sure where I'm going with that. Like, now I'm willing to call myself an artist, but am I willing to, like, act like I'm an artist? I don't know. I'm still kind of working that out and, like, what that means to me.
Well, I think it's subjective what it means to act like an artist.
Right.
Does it mean you sell your art? Does it mean you get paid for it?
Right.
No, not necessarily. Like, doesn't necessarily mean that.
And, like, if people say, you know, ooh, I really like that thing that you made, it's still really hard for me to be like, I mean, to have any response besides, like, oh, but yeah, you see, like, this part that I screwed up?
Yeah.
Like, but I obviously chose the wrong color on that section. And just to, like, swallow that and say thank you is, like, really hard. But, you know, some people, when someone comes up and is like, I really like that thing you made, they're like, ooh, yeah, me too. Like, this is where I got my inspiration and blah, blah, blah. I don't think I'll ever be that person. But if I can, like, talk myself into being the person who just says thank you, then I think I'll be good.
Like, that's a good step.
And if then, like, you know, at a later point, it becomes something where it's not weird or rude to say, oh, yeah, but remember, like, that one, I had the wrong color that I chose. Then that's cool. But to, like, throw that out there in the beginning, I'm trying to stop that at least.
Yeah.
Emily gave me and my husband one of my favorite wedding gifts, a picture of a husband and wife on their wedding day on a bicycle. And it's the cutest.
Tandem.
Yeah, tandem bicycle.
It's very cute.
I just, like, fell apart when I received it, and it sits on a shelf in my living room, and everything else can be burned but that.
Well, don't risk your life saving it, because
I'm going back in.
I could draw you another one. It didn't take me long.
Well, I love it. How do you creatively contribute to the church that you attend?
Well, I think it's, like, it's been in seasons for me. So I grew up at the Oak Creek Terrace Core, and I've gone there my whole life, sporadically during college, but still, yeah.
And all our stories.
But I think, like, God has brought me through different seasons. So, you know, growing up, how did I contribute creatively? I participated in musical groups and et cetera. I terrorized my Core Cadet counselors. That was creative every Tuesday night. I terrorized my youth group. That was creative every Sunday afternoon or whatever. So those are, like, the dark years. And then like, after college, I started, God inspired this kind of love for dodgeball. So I did a dodgeball outreach for 10 years at my core. And that was awesome to see, you know, just a bunch of kids come, you know, with no church background, like coming into our building and having fellowship with one another and hearing about the gospel and seeing what Christians look like. And that was a really beautiful season for me of ministry. And then I got old and broke down, and the season kind of came to an end, and I turned it over to some younger gentlemen who have taken that over and are doing a good job. And there was also, we did a community garden at our core for two seasons, and that was a really kind mm-hmm. of creative idea and something that happened for just two seasons. And that's the other thing, is like when we create these things, it's like not all, you know, like not every song is Amazing Grace, and not every idea in the church is a hospital or literacy. And some of these things, you know, that we create are just for ourselves, or are just for the Lord and in the secret. And like a lot of songs that I've written won't see the light of day, won't be sung by the church. And that's like so cool. They don't go anywhere other than like my heart to the Lord. And some of these things that he's called me to, like some seasons end, you know, like not every program is, you know, Sunday school or Corps Cadets or whatever these like seemingly eternal programs are. Some have seasons. So how does the church benefit from like our creative contributions? It's like, hopefully it'll touch people. And it'll bring people into fellowship, but also like, man, I benefit so much because the church allowed me to be creative and gave me a place to be creative. And, you know, and leading worship at my core, or introducing a new song that I've written, that's been such a cool thing for me and such a great vehicle of expression.
What about you, Emily?
In my own core, which is Norwich, in case I didn't mention that, it's weird for me because I still just like think of myself as a Kalamazoo person, mm-hmm. but I haven't lived there for 5 years now. Yeah. So anyway, at Norwich, I think like there are some creative things that I'm in, the band and the praise band or whatever, but I think that usually my creativity is used just like in random situations. It's always like at the top, ready to like bubble over, but it's not like, you know, I'm sitting there like, oh, I'm the resident photographer and graphic designer and video producer or something. But, you know, when Sunbeams needs a new worksheet, mm-hmm. I make the worksheet. And, you know, when we have this event in December every year that requires a lot of decorating, so everybody was looking at me like they looked so afraid, because the person who like usually used to do that has retired from their position. So this year I like walked in the room, they're like, you have to check this after we're done. Mm-hmm. And I walked in the room and they had done it perfectly well. Like it looked exactly how it was supposed to be. But my like creative presence was in that case used just like to calm them down. And even in that project, there were, like, some other things that I kind of added that it wasn't, like, huge stuff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, some official function as a volunteer or something, but...
Well, what I don't hear you talking much about, and which I think there's more to it, is, well, when I see you post pictures on social media mm-hmm. from leading Sunbeams, I loved being a Sunbeam. Your Sunbeam experience can be its best when you have a really good leader. And I see the pictures you post, and I'm like, I would have just loved being Emily Sunbeam. Because you create, like, not like a tangible creation, but like you can see from the pictures, like you're creating an experience yeah. for these little girls. And I think you're not crediting yourself there as much as you should.
Okay, well, to be fair, there are three of us, so that's like a team effort, which is part
which
of...
Which is the best way to work sometimes.
Really, that...
Sometimes.
And especially for Sunbeams, like, those girls are adorable and wonderful, but they're elementary school kids, and they have tons of energy, so having three of us is like just fantastic. Mm-hmm. It makes everything possible. And yeah, I don't know how to say this, but the material that you're given for Sunbeams is not like, it's not complete. It needs a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know. I think that is kind of intentional. Like,
yeah, I think so.
So that it's open, so that it mm-hmm. works for every group, and you can adapt it to if you have like two inner city kids or like 50 or, you know, wherever you are, mm-hmm. it'll work. But to work for everyone, it has to have less stuff than you need. So we always kind of take it and we build something out of it, which is kind of the fun part as mm-hmm. well. I get that like a lot of Sunbeam leaders probably get tired really quickly. But at least at first, I think they all have to agree that it's fun to like take that simple lesson and like find a way to make it work in a more creative way. So with the three of us, and like it's my two sisters, so we know how to work together. It's not like it's going to be really awkward and we have to like plan a meeting or something. We just sit at home because we all live together also, which is a completely different story. But we just sit at home and like, how are we going to do this? Okay, you do this, you do this. Emily will make us a new worksheet, which we haven't been doing as much, but we do make a lot of extra worksheets. Which I meant to make them available to other people, but I haven't. I've been kind of just hoarding them.
Yeah. Share the wealth, but, Emily.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's fun for us. And I think by the time that we're, like, kind of tired and it's not necessarily fun, we will have established what we can do. Mm-hmm. And then, like, our core might change sizes. It's not likely to change size by, like, huge numbers. So the stuff that we've made for ourselves now will probably work as long as we're doing it, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice.
I would love to be one of your Sunbeams.
It is fun. We do fun stuff. Also, we're, like, I don't know. I feel like my sisters and I kind of kept our, like, childlikeness a little better than some people.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of roll our eyes a lot at, like, the people who are our same age but seem to think that they're grown-ups now. We have a mortgage, too, but, like, that doesn't mean that you have to pretend that you don't like chicken nuggets anymore.
Right.
So,
for the record, everyone, Emily's dressed like a Sunbeam right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, as always.
But she's just in Sunbeam yellow.
Yeah.
That's it.
What was I saying? Oh.
Do you like chicken nuggets?
I do like chicken nuggets. And, like, we kind of still like a lot of the things that kids like, or we remember it. We're not going to pretend that that we don't remember what it's like to be 7 and what kinds of things we would like. And we're bored by the same type of things that they are. So so at some point, adult ADHD works in your favor because, like, we have to plan it so that we're not bored.
That's right.
And if we're not bored, they probably aren't either.
You're doing a fabulous job. I've never even been there or audited. Class?
Audited a class, yeah.
But
you can, anytime.
Good. Okay, thank you for making that available. In what ways do you think the church can do a better job at embracing creatives?
Well, I think, you know, so much of it is kind of like self-actualization, just like, oh, yeah, this is who I am in Christ. And, you know, in Him, like, I don't need to be afraid of failure. I don't need to be afraid of what people think of me. So, like, kind of fostering that kind of those community values of, yeah, you're in the church, you're in Christ. Like, this is the place where you can express who you are, and you can create something. So I think, you know, like the history of the church and specifically music, but I think this is, you know, applicable to every type of creative endeavor. It's like for so long we Paul, all like the first kind of instruction on worship was like, hey, encourage one another with psalms and hymns and sing some songs and make music in your hearts to the Lord. And that was like, you know, that's when you look at that instruction and you see who we are today, it's like, oh, well, that's, you know, helpful, Paul, you know, and I think we do that. And yet, it, you know, he kind of leaves it really open-ended. Like, he doesn't say how to do it. He doesn't say what instruments to use. He doesn't say how loud or how fast or how whatever it should be. So so we can do a good job, you know, in the church embracing creatives by just kind of staying true to the basic tenets of our faith and the basic instructions of, you know, what the church should look like. And then when people come along that are good at rap or dance or something that wasn't popular in Victorian England, you know, when we were founded, it's like, yeah, you guess what? We have a table here and you're all invited to it. And what do you got to bring? It's a potluck of worship and let's see what you got and let's like honor God together. And I think that's such a, you know, such a beautiful thing. But you see this like history of the church is like there's like in sung music, it's like there's unison and that's what everyone's just saying in unison. And then someone came up with, you know, like polyphony and like harmony and people were like, no, like we can't do this. This is too, you know, crazy, you know, that we can't sing in harmony. And actually like the Pope banned harmony. Like he made a decree in 1324. He said, no, you cannot sing in harmony. It's too chaotic. It's too it's too loose. It's what the people of the world are doing.
Loose.
And he banned it. And then, so then you see this period of like, there's something that's created and then it's too chaotic and we don't know what to do with it. And then there's like a period of just like wanting to restrain it and wanting to bring it to order. And then there's a period of that. Historically, these periods keep happening. And then there's something new is created, a new expression. And I'm not sure where we fit in that. I feel like we're kind of coming out of the period of restraint and order prayerfully, because I think that's when it gets fun, is when you kind of get to the new thing with holding on to what, you know, what matters and what we've learned along the way. And it's like, oh, and now we can be something more. Mm-hmm. And particularly like, sorry, I'm focusing on praise and worship, but like this whole concept of worship wars and all this kind of stuff, which I feel like we're finally – we're almost about to have the last funeral for that, which is that'll be a good day. And we're like pulling out our troops of that war. It'd be good, you know, to do that because really it's like I always say, like, it's not like it's a changing of the guard from like brass bands and songsters to praise bands and dance groups and drama groups. But it's like God in his mercy and his creativity has allowed more guards. And that's really cool. And that's that. Like, is his character. So if we can, like, somehow, like, walk that, live in the tension of this, like, wanting restraint and order to wanting a new thing and wanting to express yourself in a new way and giving God, like, all of that we have in terms of creativity, it's like we'll be so much better off. So how do you embrace that in your church? It's just like you make room at the table and mm-hmm. you welcome people and honor what God has done for them.
What do you think, Emily?
It's hard to talk about, like, anything that's outside of my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And from my experience, like, the church has been really good to me as a creative sure. person. I grew up in, like, a fairly small and extremely nurturing core where, you know, everyone knew me and everybody would, like, take care of each other and there wasn't really like a standard of excellence necessarily in every church meeting. Like no one really would be mad if a kid wanted to do a solo and then it was terrible because like they're a kid and they're growing into this place. And what's more important than the quality of this music right now is that we like nurture this young person. Mm-hmm. So from that point, like that kind of helped me grow up as a person, and I am a creative person, so that's just kind of how I grew up. Another thing that is sort of weird, but helpful, I guess, is like I'm kind of a like the classic creative type person, you know, with like being kind of scatterbrained and whatever. So people kind of recognize that and they're like prepared to forgive it. But I think in terms of like just being more embracing to people in general, mm-hmm. if other people had the same advantage where they weren't like necessarily criticized or things weren't expected of them before they were known, then I think that kind of freedom would probably open it up for a lot of other people as well, where it's maybe not so obvious that their brain's thinking differently, but it is. Because, like, God created all these brains, right? And he didn't make them all the same.
Right.
In fact, probably none of them are the same, but some, like, you could kind of put them into categories, sort of, I guess. But if we start acting like they're all going to be the same, then kind of set ourselves up for failure because we're not understanding the basic principle of what a human is.
Yeah, just celebrating our differences.
Yeah.
I think would be a huge relief to all of us.
Which, like,
and to say it's okay.
Yeah, which is the part that I feel like I'm not really sure if it's just because I happen to be blessed with, like, all these super nurturing people or if it's just, like, that obvious to people that
yeah, because I'd say that isn't the case
I don't know.
For a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has been the case for me, which is fantastic. And, like, now I'm kind of, like, growing into my identity or whatever because I'm 30 years old, so I probably should do that eventually. But from this point on, like, if somebody wasn't treating me well in that regard, like, I think because I've already grown up with all of this advantage, like I would know that that wasn't okay. But a lot of people kind of face that adversity, I guess,
right
from the get-go, and so they never get to grow into this person that they're meant to be. Right. And that's just like completely like spitting in the face of the God who made them.
Right.
Like that's
the temptation is to just homogenize everything and let's all look the same, and that's definitely not a biblical narrative. You know, it's like you know, the body of Christ, and we all have our own special function, and some are, you know, like when one part suffers, we suffer with it. When one part's exalted, we rejoice and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's a big pitfall of any cultures where we're like, nope, this is who we are, and we're defining it, and we look like this, and we sound like this, and we dress like this, and we act like this. And, you know, like I was in a meeting recently where it was like 100 people that all work for the Salvation Army. And, like, I was in the room and I looked around and it just dawned on me. It's like, oh, my goodness. Like, everyone in this room has the same haircut.
Yeah.
Like, every single woman has the same haircut. Every single man has the same haircut. And I was like, I don't know if this is, right. Like, like, how did that happen? How did that happen? What are the chances that you get 100 people and they all have the same haircut? Now, that sounds very strange.
Sounds like a horror movie.
And vain, maybe. I'm not trying to be vain. I'm not trying to condemn someone for having a haircut. That's fine. I don't know.
Were they all bowl cuts?
They were all bowl cuts. Yeah. But I was just like, oh, man, like our culture, like what are the chances like everyone like really wants to go to their stylist or barber and like I want to look like the person next to me. Mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing, like not just in our haircuts, but in our actions and in who we are in Christ. And it's just like, you know, the Bible says a tree will be known by its fruit. And it doesn't say apple trees are known by having apples,
right.
You know, or banana trees, bananas on trees.
Yeah.
Banana, you know, whatever. So it's like, that's kind of cool. It's like, we're known by producing fruit, not by being a certain type of tree or doing or growing our fruit the same exact way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, I don't know anything about trees really, but I know that they act differently and they produce fruit differently and they need different types of nutrients and variables to grow. And that's like freeing. It's same with the body of Christ, that analogy. It's like, yeah, a hand does operate different than a foot and not one is better than the other. They're all necessary and they should all look and act differently because they're created unique on purpose.
And we function as a church best when we do
right
act differently.
Right.
All right, guys, I think we're at an hour and 15 minutes. Got a lot of good stuff to work with.
How long are they?
Between 40 minutes and an hour. Two of them have been an hour. So
how long was Danielle's?
Danielle's was like 2 hours.
Whoa, so let's keep going.
We can beat that.
Yeah, so that's about it. All right, thank you for joining me, you guys, and sharing about your life and your creativeness and your expression and what motivates you and how really I think your creative process is a part of your act of worship. And I think this will inspire a lot of people to tap into that creative part of their lives that is really a part of who they are because they were created and we are image bearers. So thanks for coming down.
Happy. God bless you, Prepper Podcast. Preppers, right? You're the preppers in your bunkers. I hope you can hear us in your bunkers. Don't forget to what's in season. Start canning that now. You never know when the Democrats are coming. So prep as much as you can and hold on to your guns.
All right. Thanks. Bye. Thanks again, Emily and Eric, for sharing with our listeners. Make sure you are following us on iTunes so you receive notifications for each month's episode. And you definitely don't want to miss March's episode with Courtney Rose. See you then.